Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's September 20th, 2013. You're listening to the best PokerCast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
I'm Scott Long, and you couldn't do it. You still had to laugh when you started.
Just a little bit, because you're such a funny guy.
Tell that to my wife, please.
Yes, well, she knows, but she knows you're funny looking.
Yes, that's true. It doesn't make any sense, because, you know, she could have married a whole host of good-looking guys that she was looking for, right?
I guess.
It's not like I was going to get prettier the older I got, right?
No, that's true. Of course, you wouldn't get pretty at all anyway. I don't know why would you use that word to describe you, but better looking.
Well, I could be a pretty boy. I could be a pretty boy.
So what's going on?
Well, yeah, it's been a, our fans probably don't know this, but I often do this to you. I send you an email that says, today's daily chuckle.
Yeah.
Today's daily giggle, whatever it is, you know, something that's gone on in the business that just, I know you're gonna, I would think you're gonna giggle at or chuckle at, right?
Yeah.
So this week, this week's daily giggle came yesterday. It had been long rumored that we are finally going to get the email from the Full Tilt claims distribution company about how we go about getting our money, right?
Right.
And mine came yesterday, Chris.
Sweet.
And it went to my spam folder. How pricelessly perfect is that?
Yeah, it's not surprising at all. I mean, even the people who make computers are ignorant to online legislation.
It would have been funnier if it went to my scam folder.
Scam? Oh, jeez. Where's the dancing bear when you need him? Get the big hook and pull him off stage. That was terrible.
Oh, come on, it's not bad. I just changed one letter there. That's probably good. That's good comedy there, man.
So tell me, what was this monumental email? What did it look like? What did it say?
I didn't know, but I got 13 cents on Pulse. So you really think I'm going to go through any kind of effort to get 13 cents back? I did open it quickly, and it was, you know, as general, a whole bunch of legal googly gop and stuff. So, you know, heart goes out to those of you that actually have real money on that site and need to wade through all that, because took one look at it and said, thank you for 13 cents. But I guess it's good that they're finally the email's finally going out. I wonder though, how many people didn't get it? How many people went to their spam folder? And what I'm worried about is I know through our business that not a lot of people check their spam folders.
No, that's true. That is so true.
You set that up and you're like, oh, and you trust it blindly like the little GPS girl. And say, oh, well, if the spam folder said I didn't need to read it, I don't need it. And this is a case of something that I think you might want to read if you have more than 13 cents on Full Tilt.
That's right.
But people just don't check their spam folder. I check it religiously every day because it is surprising to me how much stuff in there is stuff that I want to read.
Just not
included.
Yeah, we experience that a lot with our poker room managers. You know, we're like, hey, did you get no? What do you mean no? And then you go with them and you sit down next to them at their office and... Georgic spam? Oh, I need to check that? Yeah. Oh, look, there's 45 emails in there from you. So it does happen. Yeah, check your spam. But that's why we came out with this handy-dandy magazine, so that people can read about it in our magazine and then realize, oh, maybe that should have come. Maybe I should be looking for this email. Maybe I should go diving deep into the bowels of my email folder and find it in the spam and get my money back, you know? I don't have any money on there, like zero. Like, I went broke the last time I played on there, and so I'm not even sure if I'd even get an email so I haven't looked for
it. Yeah, I was going to say, if you don't have any money. To be honest, I was surprised I got it. I guess, you know, it's kind of like some kind of computer-generated one, so if I had a balance at all,
yeah, exactly.
I had a penny on there, they're just going to send it to me because, you know, they don't want to deal with me following up and whining about not getting my penny back.
I think we should do a sort of an experiment, though, for, you know, the good of science, and you should actually go through all of the rigmarole to get this money back, and then do it, like, keep track of the hours, keep track of the effort, and see how much money or monetarily time it takes for you to get 13 cents back.
It would be a pretty cool souvenir, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would be.
Check made out that it's got long for 13
exactly,
cents.
Exactly. And then you could put, like, a little plaque on the frame that says, this 13 cents cost me $87,000 in, you know, in time, work, or, you know, whatever the amount of money it would end up being. But, I mean, it would be pretty hilarious, because I think just the fact that, let's just say the amount of time it took you to even find the email and read it cost more than the 13 cents that you'd be retrieving from the account.
It's true.
I mean, it really did. And now we're talking about it on the show, so, I mean, now you can write it off. But, I mean, really, I think you should actually do that experiment. That would be very interesting to me.
You know what? You're talking me into this. So the company's going to go down the crapper now because I'm going to commit fully to this experiment that you want me to do, and I certainly don't have time to do it. But I'm going right now. I actually saved the email. I moved it out of spam so I could read it and then put it in my temporary folder. I'm going to move it to my inbox right now as we speak.
Yes.
And then I'm just going to retire from Annie Up for about a month and a half so I can figure out all this stuff.
Yeah, keep track of the hours. Keep track of the time. Then give yourself a healthy paycheck for that. You know, I'll tell you. There, and I make $50 an hour in my business or some incredible money amount. And then see what it would come out to. I think it's interesting to see if you can actually get that 13 cents. I don't think you'll get it. I think they'll run out of money before you get your 13 cents. But
you think so?
I don't know. I mean, it's hilarious. The stamp and the paper it would be printed on would cost more than the money they're giving you.
But, you know, that happens every day. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I get an email from some, you know, lawyer somewhere saying, good news, you're part of a class action for the Columbia Tape Club.
Yeah.
And you only got 18 cassette tapes for a penny instead of, you should have got 19. And here's the settlement. You read through 9,000 pages of dead trees to find out that you get 27 cents if you claim it.
Yeah.
And I claim it, and I get my 27 cent check, and it happens all the time. So,
what's one more dead forest?
Exactly. And it could be wrong. It could be as much as 39 cents. And I really could be just turning my back on a bountiful collection of riches here.
There you go.
I just remembered it was too little for me to get in any sit and go. So it has to be less than a dollar.
Do you even remember, like, your password and your sign? It was what, off deadline was your sign on?
I do remember that. Yeah, I can guess my password.
Well, now I guess we can move on to the next topic here. I have returned to online poker, my friend.
Excellent.
It started with a post from Gambit, our good friend Gambit, from the home game and from the show. He posted on AnnieUpMagazine.com/forum about PokerStars' mobile app now expanding to mixed games. So I was like, well, that sounds pretty cool, and it's mobile, and I have never downloaded the mobile app ever. I wasn't even certain that they had one for us, just because we couldn't.
Yeah, you're not really a mobile kind of guy. You're kind of a couch sitter.
I mean, I got the iPad, you know what I mean? And I've got a nice iPhone. I got the newest one. So, I mean, I could conceivably have it and use it, but it just, something was weird about playing for no money, you know, on the iPad or whatever. So I was like, well, let me check this thing out. So what I do is I checked for the actual app, and I downloaded the one for the iPad. And I had to remember my sign-in and my password, but I did somehow. And at first shot, too, I actually remembered it, even though it's been years. And it was, I have to tell you, the app is flawless. As far as it's never, like, crashed on me. It's instantaneous, and it's clean. I mean, I was very impressed with the app. I really was. I have nothing bad. I mean, when I say what I'm going to say now, it's not really a bad thing to say about it, but it wasn't as complete as I'm sure the mobile app for Gambit's phone was, because I'm like a first-generation iPad, or it's because it's an Apple or whatever. But there, like, the stuff he talked about is not on my app. I don't have the mixed games on there, so I was kind of disappointed in that. All it has is Omaha and Hold'em, and then Stud. So you have to, I mean, I guess you could play it if somebody sets it up for you, but I can't go in there into a ring game and find a play money stud, like stud 8 game or anything like that. I can only find Hold'em or Omaha. But if I'm in, like, no, I guess that's it, because I couldn't find Home Games wasn't on there either. I looked for the Home Games because I'm still a member of the Antiup Nation Home Games.
Right.
And I couldn't find that either. So I remembered that we talked last week about Papes, you know, the Play Money Antiup Intercontinental Poker Series that is still going on thanks to the efforts of Poker Geek and Gambit and those guys. So I said, you know, maybe I'll make an effort to play that, because you always get the email telling me that the new game has been set up, so I always know when it's on. And I was like, all right, well, I got the app, and when he sends me that, I'll be able to sit in bed late at night and do this, you know, this Papes thing, hang out with the Antiup Nation or whatever. And no, I can't do it that way. I couldn't get on the Home Games that way. So then I had to go grab my wife's laptop and download the software into there just to play Papes. And I did. I played Papes this week. Very, very cool. We played No Limit 5-card draw.
Oh, really?
And I made the final table.
Awesome.
The legend grows. of course, it was the final table of the Second Chance tournament, again, because I keep forgetting when the actual tournament is. I thought it was at 9 o'clock. It was at 8. So I missed that. Joe 1973 or something like that won the title. Good for him. So I played a little mixed games and a little 2-4 five-card draw with Gambit for a while. I crushed him. Then I got into the Second Chance, and it was very exciting. Good stuff. Everybody, you know, everybody was there from the old days. You know, we had a grand total of 8 people in the tournament. It was great. 8 people, and all I needed was one elimination, and I made it to the final table. So that was great. I got to the final table, and I'm not going to tell a bad beat, because if I do, I'll owe all of $6, because that's how many listeners we have now, at least according to that poll about who you agree to more. It is pretty sad. I think you and I voted on there, and there's only like 9 votes. So if we both vote, take that out. It's only 7 people listening to the show now. I don't know why we're still doing it. You guys got to speak up. But I went in with like 3 aces and lost to a straight, and then had aces up, and somebody drew like 4 and made a straight and knocked me out or some bizarre thing. So I got knocked out. I went out like in 5th or 6th place or something. But it was nice to see the guys. It was nice remembering all the old stuff. But what I got to tell you about is Zoom.
Zoom.
I got to tell you, I don't know what to make of it, man. Because Zoom is available on the app. So I've been... After putting out the magazine in record fashion this week, spending my late nights trying to calm down, and I said, well, let me go on Zoom. That'll do it. I both love and hate this thing all at once. It's not good for me, but at the same time, it's so thrilling. I don't know what to think of it. Now, here's the deal. For those of you who don't know what Zoom is, and I'm sure you do, but it's the same as Rush Poker. That was on Full Tilt. I'm sure it's still on Full Tilt with their new whatever. But, you know, you basically pick the game you want to play. You pick the stakes you want to play. And just hordes of people go into this one location. And they're all playing the same game you're playing. And you get cards instantly. The minute you fold, boom, another hand comes. And you're supposedly in the same position that you're supposed to be if you're at a full ring or... 6 max ring or whatever it is you're in at that time. Sometimes it didn't happen that way. Sometimes it'd be like, okay, the button's supposed to go to the left of me right now because I'm the button. All of a sudden, boom, I'd be in the blinds and I'm at a 6-handed table. I'm like, wait a minute. Why am I in the blinds here? And so sometimes it doesn't work perfectly, but for the most part, yeah, the button moves around and you are in the position you were supposed to be, and it is pretty instantaneous. I mean, you let go of a hand, boom, hand. Don't like it, boom, hand. And they've got this sort of fast fold button too, so you don't even have to wait for it to be your turn. You just hit fold and you're gone. You're not even in the hand anymore.
In the wormhole.
Exactly. And then boom, new hand, new place. Sometimes it's slow, like sometimes it says waiting for players because you don't have enough players or they're all involved in the hand. But I mean, it's light years faster than anything else on the internet or in live play. Anything. It's remarkable. So
yeah.
What?
No, I was just going to say, certainly it's genius whoever came up with it for an online, because the rake is just phenomenal.
Oh, sure. And that's
in a cash game format. I mean, obviously, this is you're playing for play money, but in the real money, it's got to be just a rake king, doesn't it?
Oh yeah, no, absolutely.
But and even that, a tournament, probably a tournament is over
because it gets over quicker,
fast. I would think so. Yeah. That's that rake benefits as well too. So, very good business decision, I think.
That's probably the thing that is one of the major concerns. I have two big concerns with it, but one of them is you start to get into that mode where you're just throwing hands away so fast. That even when you're in the blinds, you're like, do I really want to risk anything with this hand when I know I'm going to get on my hand in a second? So you're literally watching your stack shrink if you're playing too tight.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
So your stack is going down, down, down. You're like, wait a minute, I got to stop playing all these hands so tightly. I need to change or something. And so that leads to my next point. One, you're losing all this money from because you're thinking, well, why should I play this hand when I'm going to get a better hand in a matter of seconds? But then the other thing is now you're just sitting there waiting for hands. And so you're not really playing poker. You're losing – you're literally – your skills would deteriorate playing this game too much.
That's true.
Unless you're super cognizant of what is going on and you still take your time with it.
Well, I would say probably your math skills are going to get better, right? Because now it becomes a purely mathematical game, right?
If you're willing to put in that
poker
effort.
Poker skills are obviously going to degrade considerably, you're right, because there's no real – not that you got a lot of tells online anyhow, but you could pick up on betting patterns, and now you can't even pick up on that because you got a different group of opponents every hand, right?
Yeah, that's right. Well, you do start to see the same guys every once in a while, but yes, that's true. You don't know. And then it's like, how could you possibly even remember how that guy played? Because you're playing so many hands, you're going to forget, was that the guy that bluffed? Was that the guy that raised? Was that the lady? You know what I mean? So it's just so difficult, and I found myself, even when I tried to really concentrate and say, okay, I'm in third position, or I'm on the button here, I know that I'm, eventually you just start slipping back into that, don't like that hand, don't like that hand, don't like that hand, and you just start hitting fold, 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 and by the time you actually pick up a hand, they're all doing the same thing you're doing, so you raise, you get the blinds. I mean, it's hilarious. I mean, I have to say that it's play money. And I turned 1,000 units into about 35,000 in about 20 minutes. So these guys don't care. So when you're playing for real money, it might be completely different. But I can easily see if you're playing for like micro stakes or something, just like literally losing all of your skills and totally going on.
Well, but it's a lot like anything else with online. I think if you go back and talk about go back 5 years ago when we were all playing online happily, the big debate was, are you losing skills playing online instead of live?
Yeah.
You know, because you're not reading. I mean, Joe DiMaro would be out of business if everybody just played online poker, right?
Right.
So you're losing that kind of skill. But people that could understand online flourished online, and people that understood live flourished live, and maybe their skills didn't cross over anywhere near as well as they could. I think this is kind of like a microcosm of it, isn't it? That there are people that can do all right online. There's probably some people that really just knock Zoom out of the ballpark every night, right?
I would think.
And there's other ones that just can't ever figure it out, even though they probably think they can. So, on one hand, you're right. You're losing poker skills that you value and that probably I value and probably other people value as well, too. But it's good. It's a different game, so does it really matter if, you're just rolling it up in Zoom, and you decide, I'm going to be a Zoom player, not necessarily a poker player.
Yeah. Well, real money poker comes back to us, and that's available, I don't know if I want to do it for real money. I really don't, because I enjoy playing the way we play a lot more than I would just sit there and play hands. And I really feel like the best way to play this Zoom is to just be super tight, because they're not going to know how you play anyway, because you're playing Zoom.
In terms of mathematical at that point, I mean, I think, the guys that multi-table 50 tables at once, they're not playing real poker. They've got a mathematical calculation on knowing exactly what they're going to do depending on the situation. That's already factored into a bunch of other scenarios that don't exist at that point. And I think that's the same thing with Zoom, right? I mean, at that point, you would sit down and just figure out how to play Zoom.
Yeah.
Based on what you know about poker.
And you can probably make a ton of money doing it that way, too, and that's probably a good thing.
But you're right. If that's all you do, and then you're like, oh, you know, hey, I just ran my online account up to 10 grand. I'm going to cash out and buy into the World Series Poker Main Event.
And you go probably from 700 hands in an hour to 30 if you're lucky. Oh, man, you'd fall asleep at the table.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, that's the downside of it. But I can see it in small applications. I mean, I'm intrigued by the concept ever since I heard of Rush, you know, which was the first version of it.
Right.
I never got to play it. So I could see it in certain things. I don't know if I would actually, again, without playing it, I don't know whether I would actually get addicted to that and just start playing that all the time. But I see some times where, I mean, I was thinking about this the other day, not to get too off topic, but just thinking about online poker and how upset I was that we lost it. I'm still upset, don't get me wrong.
Right.
But I don't terribly miss it right now. You know, what I miss most is you know, Apes and playing with a nation and, you know, occasionally, you know, ending the night with a quick sit and go or something to have some fun and play some games I don't get to play, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, kind of got over both of those if I had to. You know, I'm not happy about it. But if it came back, then all of a sudden now I've got another opportunity at night to distract me from the work I'm supposed to be doing, you know?
Yeah.
And Zoom, I think, is an interesting thing where you could, I mean, I don't know. Again, I'm just assuming that stuff goes faster in general. So if you play a normal sit-and-go on Zoom, I've got a... Well, I don't know. You can do a sit-and-go, I guess, right? But...
Well, it'd be a multi-table sit-and-go, multi-table. I guess. I don't know. But you couldn't play a one-table sit-and-go. That wouldn't work.
But, I mean, that's probably a good point. You know, in the old days, if you played normal online tournament, you know, it's probably going to last 3-4 hours or 6 or 7, depending on how many people are in it, right?
Yeah.
And that's a time commitment, no matter what day it is. But if you could do a Zoom tournament and you know it's going to end in an hour, and I'm just pulling numbers out of the air, I don't know how long it would last, but I would assume it's faster, right?
Yeah.
Then I'd be more likely to play it, and then I feel like I'm getting a tournament in that night that I couldn't otherwise do. So, but I would sit down every day, and then the next day if I'm like, I'm home all day, I got nothing to do, I might not choose that. I might play, I want to play normal real poker.
Have you? So you've never experienced this at all, right?
No, absolutely not. No.
Yeah, you got. It's hard to describe. I mean, it's easy to describe, but it's hard to explain the experience. It's really just crazy. It's just boom, 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 boom. I mean, it's hilarious. I found myself just with the mouse like hovering over the fold now button, and then just waited. I mean, occasionally you go on a rush where you just make, you know. I mean, I definitely speculate. You know, when it comes to the hands too, I'm not just sitting there waiting for ace, king, or aces, but it does.
Right, but you're not making those loose calls that you might make normally.
No.
I mean, you're not going to get bored playing this game, right?
Not a chance.
So there's you're not going to be like, oh, it's been 10 hands since I played. All right, I'll try this. I got the hammer. All right, let's see how this goes.
Yeah, no way. And there's no way you're going to fall asleep playing this because it's not like driving down the street at 3 in the morning. I mean, no, man, I'm telling you, if you've got real money there, you are not going to be distracted.
Right. But, I mean, I guess my point, though, is that while it does degrade other poker skills, I think that quick repetition is going to avoid you getting in trouble. I mean, how many times on the hand of the week or O'Malley's move we talk about a hand just spiraling out of control because you got into a hand that you should never have gotten into to begin with? You know, hey, I've been bored, so I thought I'd take a flyer on King Trey, and then you flopped two pair, and boom, your stack's gone at the end because something happens. And you're upset about it, and the lesson really is that you should have never been in the hand to begin with to be in the position to flop a big hand and then get sucked out on.
Well, the other thing is,
Zoom would reinforce the fact not playing those crappy hands, which avoids getting you into a lot of those situations and probably helps you better play your better cards. I mean, not that anybody wants to become ace, king, or better only players, but...
Don't forget blind play, though. That's the thing. A lot of times guys would limp. And then you're in the blinds and you get in trouble when you flop bottom two and somebody's got a top pair and then it gets right.
But you already said that, you know, even when you're in the blind, you're already thinking, hey, maybe I need to gather this. I mean, I'm sure you weren't playing anywhere near as many small blinds as you normally would.
No, I wasn't. And the big blinds, too, I mean, it's if they all limped around, you're playing it, then you're kind of forgetting. Now you're just playing a hand again. It's tough. It is tough. It's an interesting experience. I can't wait till you get to try it out and put your sort of hypothesis to real world. You know, I mean, it's addictive. I'm hooked. But again, if it's for real money, I'm not sure what I would be like. I'd have to play like really small stakes first and watch how I'd perform at that and see what my bankroll would do before I was like, all right, I'm going to play this for 2-4 or real money, which that's not real money, obviously, you know what I mean, though. But for Rush, I can't imagine people playing Rush for like 100, 200. I mean, just no. If they were doing that, I don't think you get enough people to be able to play Rush for that much. But maybe you could. I don't know. That'd be a lot of fun to watch. And can you even be an observer? I don't even know. What would you be observing?
Observing.
You know? Yeah. It's like quantum mechanics. You know, you'd be popping in and out of existence every, I don't know. But that's a little too far over everybody's head probably there. But hey, let's get on the listener spotlight before I talk some more trash.
I love it.
Each week we spotlight a listener who called our hotline 813-448-1120 or emailed us at podcast@annieupmagazine.com. And if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with Call the Floor and Hand of the Week, we send them something fantastic. This comes from Gus, and he said he's frustrated with bad play. I'm a recreational player who dreams of one day turning pro. Though I don't have a lot of time to spend at the tables, I've read several books and listened to the podcast to help me improve. Well, there's his first mistake. I try to follow as much advice while playing tight aggressive, calculating pot odds, putting opponents on hands, etc., and put that into practice whenever I play in home games, a local pub league, or low-entry tournaments. My problem is that although I enjoy playing and feel that I've become a better player, my results don't reflect that. Too often I'll make a 4x raise with ace-king and lose a large percentage of my stack to someone who flopped 2-pair by making a ridiculous call with king-tray. I would like to try to entering a 50-pound tournament or playing 1-pound, 2-pound cash games at my local casino as I fancy my chances of doing better against better players, but I can't justify that expenditure to the missus when I can't win at lower levels. Is there anything I can do to improve my results against the fish, or should I try my hand against better players, or should I accept that I'll never be able to make money at poker no matter how much I study the game?
No, Gus, don't give up on your dream, buddy. I guess the first thing I'll say is, yeah, you're never going to get better at poker playing against crappy players. You're just not. So I understand what he's saying, that it's tough to justify to the missus, probably even to himself. That's why he's asking. I don't think she's asking him to email us to find out the answer here. If you're waiting to really nail these local pub leagues or these home games and things like that, I think you're going to be waiting a long time. So I think you need to get into slightly better play. And I think you might be surprised that the local 50-pound tournament or 1-2-pound cash game is probably not going to be terribly better than what you're already playing. But you got to play against better players, or at least players that care. And that's kind of the problem. This is always the problem with the local pub leagues. I mean, I love them because they give people an opportunity to play the game for free and introduce them to poker and hone their skills a little bit and then move on. But you have to move on. That's the thing. And at this point, it sounds like you're doing everything you're supposed to do. You're reading, you're figuring out all the right plays to make, and I think it's time to take a shot and play with someone a little bit better. Maybe not fully commit to it, not say, hey, missus, we're going to take the rent money today to see whether I can make a go at this, but I think he's probably just going to be perpetually frustrated playing with the players he's playing at now, and that's not good.
I will take a different approach here. I would believe if you had the chops right now to fulfill those dreams, you could still win at these events, and you would still be crushing it. Now, you can agree with me or not. I don't really care. What I'm saying is,
you don't care anymore.
I know Chris Ferguson is a bad example because people were upset with him, but. He's the one who did that sort of turn a no money into 10 grand thing, and he played free rolls. He played 1 cent, 2 cent, stuck to his bankroll management stuff, and he still managed to, and I think he got his goal with 10 grand. He successfully still crushed those games, and so I think Jonathan Little did it too for a while.
Right.
So although you are coming up against the people that Scott talked about who don't care and play king tray and then flop 2-pair when you have ace king, that's just variance. That's just, hey, eventually you'll get this guy's money. If you still need to learn how to beat these people, You still need to learn to win at every level to move on, I think. And I'm not saying that you should move on, because I agree with Scott. I think if you play money or local pub stuff, you're never going to really play against people who are thinking and using deductive reasoning or whatever it is that you're using in your game. So, yeah, I do think you need to move on, but I think I still think you should find some success in low-entry tournaments and home games. If you're not crushing your home game, where you know how everyone plays, and you've been playing with them for that long, if you can't crush your home game, you're not going to be a pro someday. Because you need to be able to crush that home game. Because if those guys are recreational players and you're recreational players, but you're trying to become a pro, you need to be able to win at that game every single time. And if you're not, I mean, yeah, occasionally there'll be variants where you'll get bad luck or something. But really, if you're not beating these people, they're not going to get any worse as you go up. They're going to get better. So you need to be able to figure out how these people play and beat them and then move on. So beat them first. That's how I feel.
Okay. No, I don't necessarily disagree. I guess the other thing I would say, too, is that I feel that I'm becoming a better player, but my results don't reflect that. I think we've all gone through that yeah. When you don't know what you're doing, you're just stumbling around and luck seems to be your lady, right?
Right.
And then when you start learning how to play, then you start doing things the correct way and they don't seem to always work out. That doesn't mean that you're worse. It just means that you're going to that stage where you're learning to be a better player, and eventually when you come out on the other end, you're going to be a better player than if you had never decided to pick up a book or listen to a better podcast than ours. I was thinking about that the other day on my walk. You know, I was remembering back the days when I first started playing online poker, and I would play any king suited card.
Yeah.
That is how that was, hey, and I might get a flush, a king high flush, that's great, right?
Yeah.
And I did. I did well. I remember winning, and then when I finally learned that that's terrible play, then I started losing. And it's frustrating, but now I think I'm a better player than I ever was, so you had to get through that. So I wouldn't be too discouraged right now.
And one of the things that I think that we can also apply to this is everyone thinks that. And I think when you're at our level, which is not very good, we're just recreational players as well, everyone thinks that when you get a bad beat or when you're playing with players when you go to showdown, you're convinced you have the best hand, and they turn over two cards you could never, ever put them on, and they beat you. They all think, well, this wouldn't happen at X level. Right. They all think that. So yeah. I used to play online. I would play micro limits. I would love to go play at our local Tampa Bay Downs because they used to have a 50-cent dollar game, which was so much fun. People would buy in for $20, and I would just walk away with like $300 because they were just so bad. And then I would play in that game, and I would see people playing these cards, and I'm like, well, it's $15, but it wouldn't happen at like 2-5 where they're buying in for a lot of money. And then I would buy in for a 2-5 game and watch these guys still turn over the same cards.
Yep.
But they're playing you, not the cards. And so it doesn't really matter. Just sometimes it gets there for them, and they're like, oh, bonus. I was going to outplay this guy, but now I flop two pair and don't have to.
It's an excellent point.
Yeah, and so they just turn over those cards, and you think, oh, it's happening at 2-5, too. So it happens everywhere. You watch on television, if you watch the cash games, you watch the nut jobs on there who have tons of money, and they have they don't really care, and they just their greatest thing is just taking the big pot off of some legend. So they're playing deuce-5 in the small blind and then trying to outplay you and stuff. And that's the way people play. No matter where you go, you're going to find the people playing King Trey and outflopping your Ace King. It's just going to happen. So you really got to be able to win wherever you are before you consider even thinking about being a pro at a game.
Right.
Very difficult.
All right. Well, let's move on to call the floor. If you find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game and not sure what the proper ruling should have been, email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com, and we'll have our veteran poker room manager, Jody Russell, tell you how he would have ruled. This week's sponsor is J Design Playing Cards, official playing cards of Antiup. Check out J Design's great cards and more at classicplayingcards.com. And this week's comes from Bob Davis in Portland, Oregon. And he says, I'm playing a tournament at an Oregon poker club that offers players one rebuy. Player number one moved all in, and player number two, who had recently joined the table, asked player number one if he has rebought. Player one doesn't answer. Player two asks the dealer if the player has rebought, and the dealer says he's not at liberty to say. The floor is called, and the floor says Texas Hold'em is a nonverbal game, and therefore there is to be no discussion on the matter. Is this the correct ruling?
Jody says, poker is a game of tells and information. Everyone at your table had a right to know whether this player had already taken a rebuy, but should have asked for that information between hands. The four-person's explanation was not what I would have said, but the end result is the same. The house shouldn't do anything that will possibly change the outcome of a hand. A common similar situation is when someone wants to know who the pre-flop raiser was after the flop is out. No one should provide this type of information during the play of a hand, and I couldn't agree more.
Yeah, it's a timing issue right
here. Yeah, no reason why you shouldn't have asked it when you sat down, but you can't ask it when you're in the hand.
Well, you know, and I wrote Bob back, I think we exchanged a couple emails. I'm a little surprised, because it sounds like in this tournament there wasn't any kind of thing for players to visually be able to tell that people haven't rebought. Now, I mean, I don't play a lot of rebuy tournaments anymore, but usually you have something in front of you. Maybe it's the buy-in receipt that proves that you haven't done your rebuy yet, and they collect that from you when you've done your rebuy, or you've got a rebuy chip of some sort,
right,
or something like that, I think.
Yep.
So my question is, if in this particular club there's nothing like that, and players are moving from table to table, I think it's a bigger issue of how does the dealer know whether you've already done your rebuy or not.
That's true. The other thing is that he did move to that table, so it sounds like they were pretty far into it. Could it have been a situation where they collected some of the stuff that the rebuys have? I don't know. I mean, probably not.
Well,
because
it could have, but I mean, again, the point then should be that there's got to be some kind of visual evidence, I would think, unless there, I mean, maybe there's room that does it differently. I'm trying to think of how else you would do it.
Yeah.
Where the dealer or a floor that comes over who does the rebuy, whoever it is, whatever the poker room official that gives you the chips when you decide you want to rebuy, knows whether you can do it or not. I mean, it's not an unlimited rebuy, it sounds like. No, it's one rebuy in this tournament, so you only get one.
Right.
So there's got to be some way, some trail of some sort, and I think it has to be a visual trail to let you know whether you get that those chips or not. Right?
Yeah, no, you're right. You're in it, and I don't know, did you say that he did tell you there was no indication?
I just remember we had a couple emails back and forth, and I don't think I ever got clarity on that. He might have answered, but in the affirmative. But,
if it was one of those, like, clear lammers, you know, those circle disc,
right,
ramp, you know, and he had it behind his stack or something, then what do? Do you be like, is there a rule that you have to make your lammers visible? You have to make all your big chips visible.
I think you would have to. I mean, I think that would be, but that would be the question. It wasn't just asking the rebuy. It's like, you know, I can't see his rebuy chip or his receipt or whatever else. And I think that's a different story. I mean, again, it's in the middle of the hand, so maybe not. But I think that would be part of it. But as he described it, yeah, I mean, in the middle of the hand, you can't be, as Jody said, asking, you know, who raised pre-flop and that kind of stuff. You just got to wait to the end of the hand, because it is going to affect that hand, and you should know that information. But again, my point is, I think it should be clear if you've rebought or not.
Yep.
It should just be clear.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, and rebuys are going to be go the way of the dodo pretty soon, so get this figured out sooner rather than later.
Just
re-entries pretty soon.
Absolutely.
Hey, we get to complete an old Manly's move this week. Always exciting when we can do that. This was his 50th episode, so woo-hoo, let's refresh our memory with part one.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I am Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we are seated at a $1, $2 PLO 8 game. The action's been pretty timid early on, and we've been able to steal some pots early. We've got a stack of about 275, up around 75. It's folded around to us in the MP of this nine-handed table, and we look down at the ace of clubs, three of spades, three of diamonds, deuce of diamonds. We wish our ace was suited, but we like this hand. However, we don't like raising in this spot, since we know we can outplay these guys post-flop, and we don't want the pot to be too big when we get there. We call. It's folded to the cutoff, who calls, as does the button. The small blind completes, big blind checks, and we're five-handed to a flop of the ace of spades, jack of diamonds, ten of diamonds. The small blind checks, and with $10 in the pot, the big blind makes it $8 to go. This player seems to have a decent grasp on the game, but he has one major drawback. He can't seem to release a hand, or slow down on a hand, even when he knows he's beat, and he bluffs at all the wrong times. He started the hand with about 150. This is where the first major decision comes in. With top pair, no kicker, an extremely low flush draw, and only runner-runner outs at the low, this might be an insta-fold. But we have a bit of a lapse in judgment, and we make the call. The cutoff folds, but the button calls. The small blind gets out of the way. With $34 in the pot, the turn brings the six of diamonds, and the big blind makes it pot, $34 to go. What do we do?
This is a classic Omaha 8 trap, I think. So we made our high, but can we really think it's good? Absolutely not. And we don't have any way of improving it. It's the best it's going to get. We don't yet have a made low, though if it gets there, there's probably a good chance that'll be all ours. But that's the trap. I think we let ourselves make this call too often with the false assurance that our high might be good when we really know it can't be. And if we're wrong, then a low card will at least give us half of the pot, forgetting that we could easily be counterfeited or quartered. We only have $10 invested in this pot, and if we call, we can get raised by the button, and surely we'll have to commit a ton more on the river if we hit our low, which might not be positive EV at that point. I say, let it go. Let it go.
Sometimes there's a lot of power in being in position in poker, and same thing with O'Malley's move. I love to be able to go last all the time. Because you always go on, and all I have to say is, what Scott said.
You don't always say that, by the way.
No, I know, and that's the other beauty of it, too, is you get to make an ass out of yourself, and then I get to... But really, though, how can I improve on what you said? Other than to say this game is ludicrous and shouldn't be played, it's an abomination, I got your back, Gambit. It's sort of an inside joke, but really, I hate this game. I think it's silly. I don't mind Omaha 8. But to play that pot limit, I think, is silly. And I think we're in trouble here. So we're going to need some luck on our side. So let's hear part two and see what happens.
Hello again. With a baby flush and still just a low draw, I'm not sure we want to bloat the pot too much. We make the call. The button folds, and with roughly a bill in the pot, the turn is beautiful. Four of hearts. It's at this point that the big blind slows down and checks. What does this mean? This is really starting to feel like a value betting situation, and with the nut low, we're guaranteed at least a quarter of this pot. We count out a nice, tidy $50 bet, $2 under the pot size. The big blind rolls his eyes and said, "You got the flush, don't you?" He tosses in the call. We turn over our cards, he slams down King-Queen-9-7, and we escape with a pretty nice pot. Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley saying, in this game, you've got to know when you're beat. Sometimes the flopped nuts can end up costing you a lot of money. I hope to see you on the felt.
He said the turn. I think he meant the river.
Right, right.
In hindsight, the Broadway does make sense, I guess. And that player had to keep up the ruse on the turn. Though I think this pot size bet was borderline crazy with two callers in the hand. Yeah. I mean, the people hanging around for. But I still believe our action on the turn is influenced by the fact that we have the button left to act after us. So it's hard to imagine that neither of our opponents had a bigger flush than us, and to be honest, I think we got lucky here, or variance caught up to us, whichever you prefer to say.
Yep, I hate this game, and variance smiled on us. We were very fortunate, because so many cards are out there, and so many people are coming along for the ride. You were very fortunate that was good enough to win, so... I don't know if it was the right play, but we got lucky and got paid off. So kudos to O'Malley.
You know, and I also did when I went back, and I forgot that he gave us some good description on this this big blind who player who can't fold or slow down the bluffs in the wrong spots. Obviously, he wasn't really bluffing here. I don't think he had a made hand; just wasn't anywhere close to the best hand.
Yeah. You know, and sometimes, and it's difficult, like we're about to move into Hand of the Week, and I don't know what to expect yet, but when people write in with their Hands of the Week and when O'Malley does his move, a lot of times when they give information on other players, it's almost as if you didn't know the information, because are they telling you that information because that's going to be pertinent in the hand, or are they telling you because that's the overall, you know, profile of this player? It's a very difficult thing to try to weed through when you're analyzing this stuff or whatever, because is he only telling me that because we know this guy is going to be a person who can't slow down in this hand, so now I got to think that way, or is he trying to misdirect us so that we don't get it right? Or it's very difficult, and it's difficult for them too to give sort of a impartial view of how the hand is going, because they are just telling us, hey, I knew this guy never liked to slow down once he's in a hand, so I'm going to tell you that, and that's what's going to happen to me in this hand, so it should be a giveaway as to what happened. And it's difficult. You want to know as much information about the person, but at the same time, you're like, why are you telling me this information, you know? Right. And it's tough. It's tough to really, really make a correct assessment when you're doing these hands of the week.
Yeah, I think that's where it's much easier to analyze, or you get a richer analysis, I think, when you're doing it live and talking to somebody, your buddy at the coffee shop after the hand. Because then you could present it as unbiased as possible. In other words, I don't think you need to embellish on the profile of the player, and then let the person you're telling the story to, or the hand to, ask about the details at that point.
Yes.
You know, hey, did you know anything about this guy? And then fill it in at that point, because... and you can't obviously do that when you're emailing a hand to us, or, you know, obviously O'Malley's setting it up that way, so it's impossible to do that in the format that we're doing.
But. Right. I mean, they're trying to be thorough, and at the same time, you, as an analyzer, you're thinking, okay, is that going to be pertinent later? And if it's pertinent now, you know... So it is. It's. You're right. When you're doing it live, it's kind of like then the other person can say, "Well, was he a nut job? Because why'd you do that?" And he's like, "Oh yeah, he was a nut job." And then so you're like, "So, yeah, very interesting. Just glad he got lucky on this hand."
This is Doyle Brunson, and you're listening to Annie Up.
All right, it's time for Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast@antiupmagazine.com. This week's sponsor is Smapsoft, creator of the Chinese 13-card poker app for Apple products. Download the app today by visiting the iTunes Store. And this week's hand comes from Dan Banks from Brownstown, Indiana. Not really sure where Brownstown is, but I'm headed back up to Indiana this week. I'm kind of looking forward to it. Actually, I'm looking more forward to Ohio, but...
We don't care.
Just don't harbor any bad for Indiana.
You didn't need to say that.
Well, I mean, maybe I'm driving through Brownstown. Maybe Dan's going to buy me a drink. I'm going to look it up now. I'm going to Google map that thing.
It'll depend on what we say about him in the hand of the week, actually, before he's going to partake in a beverage with you.
All right, so he's playing Pot Limit Omaha, not 8, so you're...
Okay.
Save your bile and venom for another week. It's 6 max, though, which I love. 50 cent $1, and it's online at an American facing site.
Hmm.
He says everybody has 100 big blind stacks.
Okay.
We are under the gun.
Okay.
Which, as he said, is 3 off the button since it's 6 max.
Oh, right.
And he looks down at King of Diamonds, King of Clubs, 5 of Hearts, 8 of Spades.
Hmm. Well, since we're first to act, I'm going to limp. Because raising really doesn't do anything in Pot Limit. You're not going to get enough money into the pot to get yourself a narrow field, I don't think. So I might limp and hope someone else raises, and then I can re-raise.
Interesting, yeah.
So I'm going to limp here. I'm going to limp. Besides, it's not like, you know, kings hardly ever are going to win a PLO hand on their own unless you're maybe heads up. So, and you don't have the nut draw on anything here. In fact, you've got
really
almost a Badoogie hand. Yeah, so I would just limp here. If I raise, I mean, you know, I'm out of position unless it's a blind that comes along. So really, what am I hoping to accomplish here? Being, you know, I mean, so I'm just going to call.
Yeah, I would say that's a good point. I didn't think about that, but that makes sense. I mean, if the table has shown not to be hyper aggressive, I mean, in other words, if I know it's going to be raised and re-raised by the time it gets back to me, I don't see much purpose in limping here. I'm either going to fold or start the raising and commit to this hand. But if it's, you know, an average table, or maybe we get one raise in, the limp is pretty an interesting move, I think. Because, right, we have, I mean, the best we're hoping for at this point, really, is getting one of the two kings. And then at that point, I mean, even a set is not a hand that I get too excited about in Omaha.
Right.
Or is this 5-8, I can get some kind of weird straight. And they actually be pretty well disguised, so that's probably the best case scenario there. But no flush to fall back on. This is a dangerous hand. I think this is a. I mean, I guess the reason to raise here is to get that pot up pretty big. That if I do hit something on the flop, I can pot it,
yeah,
and really make it difficult for the draw to stick around. That'd be a reason for raising, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, you're really hoping for 6-7-4 rainbow, and then you have enough money in the pot that you can bet pot and then make everybody fold so they can't redraw on you with their set.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I mean, under the gun in a full ring table here, I'm throwing this away every day. The only reason I'm even thinking about playing is it's 6 max, and
yeah,
you know, we're down 3 or 4 players.
Yeah, this is not a great PLO hand. It's not a great hand in any circumstances, so
no.
Really, unless you're like on the button and it's folded to you and all you have are the blinds behind you, and even then, you can't put that much money in because it's pot limit. Mm-hmm. So I like the limp, but I'm sure there are all different ways to play this hand.
All right, well, our hero decides to raise to $3. Under the gun, plus one. And, that's weird. Under the gun, plus one, hijack, and everyone else folds. Oh, villain calls, I'm sorry. Boy. I was just telling, wasn't I saying at the beginning of the show that he did such a beautiful job sending us a PDF that really makes this easy to read and a pleasure on the eyes, and I butchered the hell out of it. And I'm only line 4. All right, let's start over. We raised the $3. The villain in this hand calls. He's under the gun plus one, so right after us.
Okay.
Everyone else folds. So we're heads up, going to the flop, out of position.
And there's 750 in the pot, unless it's, you know, the rake out of it, but it's about $7 in the pot.
All right, and then it describes the villain as a 29/12, which is pretty solid for 6 max PLO, with an aggression factor of 3.1. Of course, you know exactly what that means, right? Fortunately, he put the little clips notes for me. He says the 29/12 means he voluntarily puts in money on 29% of the hands and raises 21% of the hands.
12%.
Yeah, but in the footnotes it says 21. So I don't know if it's 29/12 or 29/21.
Well, but no, yeah, that's the answer. Well, no, I can't be held responsible for however I react to this hand now because I need perfect data.
But you know, this is another reason I don't miss online, because I'm incapable of putting this in, and I never did those little tracker things and all that kind of stuff,
the poker
shark
stove.
Scope and all that kind of crap.
Yeah.
I couldn't do it, and if you don't do it, then you just get brutalized. So Godspeed to Dan for doing all the work on this. All right, the pot's 750. The flop is the 10 of clubs, 9 of spades, king of spades. Obviously we get the top set, but vulnerable. What is our play?
Well, this is the problem with this game. You want to protect against a flush draw, but somebody could already have the straight. Mm-hmm. And if you bet too much, you know, this guy's got a ton of money now where he can just bet you out of the, you know, you have 10 outs, really, if he's got that straight. And if you bet pot now, that's just 750. You're looking at 15 in there, and then you put 750 in, so you're looking at, you know, a guy's going to make it 20, $23 to go or whatever, and you're looking at, okay, I got top set, but I don't have the nuts. And there's 2 more cards to come. You know, there are people who fold straights when they're faced with big bets because on a flop in this game.
Because you can't improve.
Yeah, you can't improve. People are redrawn on you. So literally, this guy could have queen, jack of spades. And so even if it's straight, you know, isn't good, he got the straight, and then he can make a flush, and, you know, you're 3 of a kind.
Then you make a straight flush, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Even if you boat up. So.
Even if you boat up, he can make a straight flush on you. So, I mean, you literally are, you know, you are not in any position to have the nuts. But I don't, that being said, I don't like to not bet here. I mean, I tried to take control of his hand with the raise, he did, with the raise. It might be interesting now if we had gone in with my attack and limped.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing what would happen, it might have been a lot more players in his hand, and then who knows. But 750 in the pot, I'm going to bet like $4. I mean, I'm not going to bet pot. Like everybody just hits pot because they can hit pot, and it's stupid.
Yeah.
And I'm not betting pot here with this
board. You can't protect your hand in this problem.
No, exactly. Exactly. This guy could already have a drawn to 10 outs.
Yeah, this is a hand where you just hold on to the wheel, let the knuckles turn white, and hope the car comes resting with your seatbelt still intact.
Yeah, and you know what?
There's even a
reason to check here. A lot of the times, most of the money gets in on the turn. The turn is where most of the hands are won in this game. So I might even check, and the most he can bet is 750. And then I could check call, and then...
I'd really like to check here, because here's the thing, what I'm thinking is... I think the normal thinking is I need to prevent him from drawing out on me if he's drawing. So I need to bet big here and try to spook him out. Where I think the better play is to keep this pot as manageable as possible all the way to the end. Because we've got two more streets of money getting in. If you pot it right now, it's 750 and he calls. That's another 50 in the pot. That's 2250 in the pot on the turn. And you're going to have to put something in there. Or if not, he's going to bet. And then you're going to call. Now the pot is massive on the river. And let's say the straight does get there. The flush does get there. Now you're out in all kinds of problems. If you check here and he checks behind and he's drawing, you don't want to give him the free card, obviously, but you've kept the pot pretty manageable. Now the pot's 750 going into the turn. You check again, the most he can bet on the turn is 750. And that gives you an option to see the river and catch your boat car or your quad at a pretty decent price.
Right. So before you were saying the straight could get there, but it could have already gotten there. So that's one thing. But yeah.
Well, if he's drawing,
to a different one. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, so if you check and he checks behind, you're golden, because now you can really totally control the size of this pot. And if your boat gets there, and then you don't care. So if he doesn't check behind, let's put it this way: what if you had bet four on the flop and a blank comes on the turn? You're not going to check the turn. You probably would feel inclined to bet, or if you bet then, now you could bet more. So now if you just check call 750, it's probably the equivalent of betting for hoping he calls and then having to either bet or call a bet on the turn. So why not just check, and if he does bet the 750, I wouldn't mind. If I have $100 in front of me, which I do, and I've got top set, I'm going to call that 750 and hope to hit one of my 10 outs. And then by me calling and checking again, he may, if he doesn't have the straight already, if he was just putting out feelers, he may check behind now because he's nervous that you called. By merely calling, you may think you have the straight. And then he might check behind with his set of nines or his two pair, or something. So I like the check call here if he does bet.
Yeah, we got such an opportunity to control the pot because it's heads up. If there's even one other person in his hand, and worse, two more, then you lost that ability, I think.
Yeah.
But heads up here, we know exactly what's going to happen. If we check here, the most that he can bet is 750. And that means the most that can be in the pot on the turn is 15. And I think that's really powerful for a hand like ours that could be ahead right now and could end up winning, but is immensely vulnerable.
Right, it'd be 2250 on the turn, because you'd call 15.
Okay, that's right.
So, but even so, at that point,
you're keeping it as minimum as possible.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you might give up. You might even give up.
And you may not bet. You may not bet the 750. You might bet 3 or 4 or 5 or something, which you can call, and then that pot keeps it just as much. Again, it's a white knuckle ride to the river when you flop top set with no backup, other than the boat outs. I think so. I want to keep the pot as small as I can, and and then hope that it holds up, and I get some money out of the guy.
I agree. So what does he do?
All right, our hero checks.
Nice.
Villain bets 575.
See, that's right. Now I'll just call that and...
Call, and we've exercised pot control, right?
Yep.
All right, so that's exactly what our hero does, our calls. The pot's now $19. We go to the turn, and it is the queen of hearts. So our board now is 10 of clubs, 9 of spades, king of spades, queen of hearts. Flush doesn't get there, but...
And even another version of the straight got there.
Exactly.
Broadway got there. So, again, we're in the same situation. It's just a street later and it's more money in the pot.
Right? Yeah. Exactly.
So I would do the same thing. I would check and see if this guy's really willing to bet $20. And even if he is, I still might call 20. I still might call 20. Just because if my boat gets there and it's not a spade, it might look like I was trying to hit the flush draw on the guy. And when the flush doesn't get there, I might consider checking again and seeing if he'll bet again. I don't know. I don't know. But I don't know if I would call 19. Maybe I would, maybe I wouldn't. It's probably a bad play to call 19, but it's borderline if you think that it's not a spade and this guy might actually bet to a check. If he can't fold...
Yeah, I mean, the only problem with calling the 19, and I would be intrigued by doing it as well, too, so I'm not saying I wouldn't, is if you make that call and then you check the river, you're almost always facing a bet at that point, right?
Which is what so I'm hoping for if I make my boat. That's what I'm saying.
Well, yeah, if you make it, but then that's a lot to ask for here. That the board's going to pair here in the end. And if it doesn't, then you know you're going to check, obviously, and then he's going to put in a whatever bet he puts in is going to be a tough one for you to call at that point. So it's not like you're calling 19; it's you're calling 19 plus.
The only thing that I'm thinking about is that, given the way that we've played it, we could be slow playing a straight with a redraw to a flush, and he might see that as well and might check the river.
Very well, good. And so, but that's going to take some moxie on our part,
isn't
it?
Yeah, I know. And so there's a lot of trust
which we
in
could
this.
Do, yeah. But yeah.
I'm certainly not going to bet here, so I don't know. I just want to, I'm going to check and see what he bets. I mean, I'm not betting when it only got stronger for the straight draws that were out there. You know what I mean? It's done nothing for me, and if I checked to control the pot, I'm going to check again and hope I can control the pot again. If he bets like $10, I'm calling. Right. It's after that. It's more than that, which I know he's probably going to bet like 15 or something and really put me to a test here, but I'm going to check.
Okay, and that's exactly what we do, and our villain checks behind.
Oh, sweet.
See? Look at that pot control right there. Now the worst we could pay on the end is 19.
Yeah.
We check, and I'm going to probably put 19 in here on anything, to be honest, even if I don't improve.
Sweet.
He's checking behind, you know. I mean, unless a spade comes, maybe he was just in a flush draw at that point. But even then, at that point, maybe the 19. He's probably not going to bet the 19 if he gets a flush. He's going to bet less, right?
Probably. And that's the thing, too, is you're right. Now he got his free card if he's using the Lee Jones or whatever rule, where he got his free card by betting and then letting us check behind because we were nervous. So we'll see what the river is.
All right, the river is the 5 of clubs. So the final board is 10 of clubs, 9 of spades, king of spades, queen of hearts, 5 of clubs, which doesn't do anything for anyone. And now it's up to us.
I'll check. It's a pretty big pot. If he wants to bet pot, I might even call 19, because why would he check the turn if he had the straight? Maybe because he had a baby straight? No, because there's no way. So unless he has jack 8, you know, unless he has jack 8, really,
yeah, it's a really advanced play at that point to
check
bet the flop flush and then check the turn.
Flop straight, right. So why would he check that turn without, wouldn't he, it would look like we were going for a flush or a full house. So if he's going for the flush, he'd want to protect the hand. And if he thinks we're going for the full house, he wants to extract value. So why would he check that turn? He'd want to protect his hand no matter what. And he didn't. So that's interesting.
So I guess the other part, the devil's advocate part, if we've deduced all that, do we not also deduce then that we probably have the best hand here and we should bet for value?
No, because you could be wrong. Again, it's incomplete information. It's a good reason to call, but I don't think it's a good reason to bet, because you're not going to get this guy to fold if he has the hand that beats us. You're only going to get him to call if he doesn't, and even then, I don't think the positive outweighs the negative here. I would still be happy with winning a $19 pot. I would check, and then if he checks behind him, we're good. $19 is $19. If he checks, if he doesn't check and he bets a little bit, I would call. I think it's worth a call here. I don't think it's worth a bet here.
Very good. All right, well, we do check, and the villain does bet pot, $19.
Good.
Our hero now asks the question that we are already trying to figure out ourselves: is my hand a bluff catcher here?
Yeah, it feels like, why would this guy check the turn? I'm going to call because I want to know. I want to know why this guy checked the turn. I want to know. I mean, it's $20. We put in about $30 in this pot. Yeah, about 30 or so. You know, if we had over 100 big blinds, we'd over $100, so we're down a little bit. But I really want to know why this guy checked the turn if he had us beat. The only hand that beats us is a straight.
Right.
So for him to check the turn with a straight tells volumes of how this guy plays. So I'll file that away for the future hands, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
It's kind of expensive, a lesson, if you're playing at that level. But to me, six-handed, why is he... And he knows that we raised preflop, so it's a very good indication that we have something like aces or a set of kings. And if he can't beat those two, why would he check the turn? If he could beat them, why wouldn't he protect it? So I have to call, I guess, because my curiosity is getting me. Not whether it's a great decision or not, but I just feel like we're ahead now.
Yeah, but I think there's enough things that scream that we should call here. Again, we put ourselves in a position to be able to call here by keeping the pot as low as we had. And I think if we successfully did that and we have a hand that beats a ton of hands, then at this point, I think it is a bluff catcher. It's worth the $19 to find out. And you're right. And even if we're wrong, that's good advertising budget there. We figured out something on this guy. And in a 6-max, the more information you get on your players, that information is more valuable, I think.
Yeah, it feels like he might have been drawing, got that free card, missed, and knew he couldn't win unless he bet. It feels like that. I'm not saying that's what it is, but it feels like that's what happens now, that he had that draw, got the free card, it didn't get there, and we just kept check calling him like a little old lady clutching to her Social Security check.
So, I mean, a set of 10s and a set of 9s would have played it exactly the same way he did, wouldn't they?
Would you have bet checks the bottom
to us
set?
And he bet, well, heads up, and PLO, and a guy that raised pre-flopped and checks into me, right? We checked on the flop, right?
Yeah.
I'd probably put in a bet there if I flopped a set.
Okay.
And then when I got called, I'm like, okay, that's not cool. And then a queen comes, so if he was drawing, then there's lots of reasons not to get more involved in this, so I'll check behind at that point. River's meaningless, and my opponent doesn't bet again. So yeah, I might put in. I might have played this exactly the same way the villain did if I had a set of tens or set of nines.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, again, if you're looking for pot control, you probably wouldn't have. But we were looking for pot control because we wanted to be able to bow it up. This guy was looking to.
Yeah, but I mean, this guy had the position. It's a completely different story.
Yeah, that's what I mean. He had position. Yeah. So.
All right. Well.
Yeah, go ahead.
Our hero actually put down some very good notes on how he played this hand, so I'll kind of get through those as quickly as possible so we can put in a frame of reference before we get to the big reveal here. He said, "Preflop Rainbow King's a pretty marginal hand in PLO, but the players behind me were folding quite a bit to under-the-gun raises, so I thought I could at least get position, which should be positive EV. Hard to argue with that. On the flop, he says, I did not leave the flop a top set because this flop hits the kind of hands that all under the gun that call under the gun raises, high rundowns. It would be hard to call a raise out of position, even with the set. In addition, someone could overplay the nut flush draw. There are plenty of hands that would call as well. Lower sets, two pair plus straight draw, but I chose a less aggressive route being out of position. If the villain raises pot, it could be a draw to the nuts, and I want to keep the pot small since I have the nut outs. The villain bets big. The nuts are certainly in his range, as well as flush draws, maybe lower sets, combo draws, and perhaps a mare.
Yeah. So it all comes back to that turn. If he had the nuts, why would he not have bet pot on the turn to keep us from drawing? Because if you have the nuts, there's nothing you're afraid of at that point, and you're trying to protect your hand, which is what you need to do in this game, unless you can outplay the player. So that turn just keeps coming back to that turn to me.
All right. So on the turn, he says, I'm not sure leading into him now that he has bombed the turn. Now hands containing 8-jack, 9-jack, 10-jack, queen-jack, king-jack, and ace-jack make straights. However, only ace-jack is the nuts. I'm surprised when the turn checks through, but assume I am ahead.
Yeah, I just don't know. That check tells me that, like you said, we could be ahead. It's just a weird check, so... Okay.
On the river, he says, I do not bet the river thinking about the only thing that might call me is a non-nut straight, which is scared to bet by playing the check call. This might be a mistake, as lower sets would probably call, but it is close. I'm happy to check it down and win most of the showdowns. When villain pots the river, I'm surprised. This is a good example of what Phil Galfond refers to as a lockdown board. The villain is polarized and should only be betting the nuts or with nothing here. However, in this specific case, the villain would never check back the turn with the nuts due to the flush draw.
Yeah.
Since I check called the flop, flush draws are in my range. If we're going to value bet something weaker, he would want a call from a hand that is weaker yet. I have checked all three streets. The hands in my perceived check calling range are all pretty weak, so why bet pot if he wants a call?
Yeah.
There are really no sensible value hands in the villain's range unless he was doing some sophisticated merge with a non-nut straight, but we'd probably do that on turn after I check due to the flush draw. See? We're actually smarter at this game than we think we are.
Yeah,
it's obviously
shows
Dan plays this quite a bit.
Until he shows the nuts at the end, and then we're like,
All right, the big reveal. Our hero determines that my hand is unquestionably a bluff catcher here, as there's nothing weaker that would slash should pot the river. The villain is polarized and heavily weighted towards bluffs. I call, and the villain shows 6 of hearts. 6 of spades, 4 of spades, 7 of diamonds.
What?
Busted flush draw.
Oh, and a terrible one at that.
Yeah. I mean, 6-6, 4-7, I gotta look back. I mean, did he have any...
He had a straight draw, 6-7, if an 8 came. But it's, like, not even close. It's, like, the worst straight possible.
Yeah.
Wow, that's horrendous. And it made
it's
a lot of sense.
Horrendous on a number of levels. It's horrendous calling that raise pre-flop.
Yep.
Wow, even six-handed, that's a hand I don't think I'm gonna be...
No, what are you hoping to accomplish there? Do you hit a set of sixes?
Sixes are worthless, because if you hit the set, it's terrible. I mean, really, you're hoping for some flushes.
And even so, six-handed, you're still going to be up against bigger flushes, probably. Wow, that's terrible.
Straights, I think, really what you're shooting for. You got 6, 4, and 7.
Yeah.
But you got to hit a 5 out there. But
wow.
Right, well, but then we checked the flop, and he bet into us, right? Just trying to steal.
Yeah, he bet his flush draw.
It's a terrible bet, I think, into with somebody that raised pre-flop, you know?
I think he's banking on what Dan said. Pardon the pun there. Yeah. I think he's banking on what he said, because he said that only hands after an under-the-gun raise would call would be in that range of queen-jack. So he could be saying, yeah, I'm betting my draws here, because he also has a gut shot to a terrible straight. But he's saying, all right, you must have ace-ace something-something. This flop scares the bejesus out of you, because
that's
it's...
a good point.
So
good
I'm
point.
Betting it with redraws to flushes that you... If you had a flush draw, you would have bet this. Meaning that you bet the flop, you raised pre-flop, and you had the flush draw, you had anything of this, you would have bet it to either protect it or whatever, to keep the momentum of the hand, the c-bet. So, yeah, I mean, I can see why the guy bet that 575, and it's not a lot, it's not the full pot, so it makes you think. But, yeah, this guy played it, and he did exactly what we all thought. I think this Dan just really sent in what was known as a 20-minute obvious brag. It felt to me like he wanted to just show his big brain on his hand here, and
he did though.
He did, and he did. It's absolutely
it turns
right.
out that we were pretty much in line with his thinking.
Yeah, so we all got big brains today.
But here's the other thing too, because I always like talking about how the villain plays at the end of these hands. I why do you check behind on that turn? I mean, I understand that you think that maybe that queen got there and opened up a bunch of straights that this guy was probably shooting for, but I would rather put in a bet there and get check raised on the turn and be able to either call hoping I could catch up or at least have that information than being in no man's land on the river, which is what happens, right?
Well, here's why I would speculate. This is a person who played 6-6-7-4 to a raise, so he's not a very good experienced player, it feels like. And if he's not very good experience, I think he got intimidated and was scared by just a mere call by the preflop raiser after that. The mere call says, does he have the straight? And now the queen's got there, so it makes an even ace, ace, jack, ten hand get there. You know, so a lot of thoughts go through your head when you got $100 in front of you and the pot's 20. You know, why is this guy just calling now? I think I'll check. And then at the end, hope my flush gets there. And when it doesn't, he checks again. Now I'm like, now I can't win unless I bet. I think he got into a trap there. I think he trapped himself, so it could be an experience.
Well, I'm sure that is. But, yeah, I mean, I guess that's the lesson we're trying to say is if you're going to take that line, you got to bet that turn, I think.
Yeah, you have to. You have to sell the story the whole way.
Because if not, you're on the river, and then it's the classic, well, I can't win without betting.
And everyone knows it.
Situation, and then exactly, yeah. And then you bet pot, and it's just like, might as well just say, hey, look at what I got.
Yeah, I bluffed. You caught me. Get more value out of that than losing $19 and then actually exposing yourself.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right, good hand, Dan.
All right, Dan, we appreciate it. And I don't like to share people's personal details, but I just want to congratulate Dan on some very happy news that he got in his family. So congratulations, Dan, and thanks on the hand. And remember to send your hands to podcast@annieupmagazine.com.
Scott will be looking for that celebratory beer in Indiana.
I got a GMAP Brownstown, find out where it is.
I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Logg.
We'll see you at the table.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120.
If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@anyupmagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.
It's September. What are you doing? What are you doing? You're making noise. Quiet.